Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. March 20th, 2017. What is the taste of spiritual pleasure? Question: What is the taste of spiritual pleasure? Answer: The taste of the spiritual pleasure is, first of all, rising above your nature, when you do not feel yourself limited by the boundaries within which you exist. We live as if in an iron cage, rushing about and bumping against its corners and edges. But when we exit it, we begin to feel our existence in the Creator, an unlimited mutual adhesion. He is inside us, and we are inside Him. Our world has specific boundaries, right, left, inside, and outside. But there are no edges in the spiritual senses, and that is why they are inexpressible. First and foremost, it is the taste of freedom. Question: But why are we speaking about so much about unity and integration? Answer: Because it is the means to attain the quality of bestowal, infinity, and freedom when you can exit yourself. Question: Does a Kabbalist feel the taste of earthly food, cold, and heat? Answer: A Kabbalist feels much more than others. There were times when my wife cooked food for my teacher Rabash, and he wrote notes to her about exactly what to add to the food, which spices. Question: Have all the tastes of spirituality been previously recorded? Answer: Of course. Tastes are the spreading of the upper light into our desires. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, the 20th of November 2016. Revelations of the Creator. Question: Is the direct revelation of the Creator to a man possible without the means of sense organs? Answer: I do not know what a revelation is. At times certain sensations of the world, as if it exists outside of him, awaken in a man. But in fact, the world is inside a man anyway. In other words, we sometimes experience such states, but they come and go. As a rule, they arise in a person at the initial stages of his Kabbalah studies during the first 2 to 3 years of studies. And then they practically disappear because a person begins to approach the state when through his own actions, his own efforts, he must receive the sensation of the upper world by himself to the extent of his likeness to it. One doesn't receive it as a small gift, but earns it oneself. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, the 27th of November 2016. How can you find a teacher? Question: I really want to have a teacher. Does the teacher arrive when the student is ready? How can I find him? Answer: It will gradually be revealed to you. I advise anyone who wants to develop spiritually to start studying regularly on the internet. We have a serious, well-organized system. Study, simply start, and you will advance. And after, come to our convention. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, the 30th of October 2016. Twelve Tribes in One Nation, Part 2. The division of the people of Israel into the 12 tribes is not artificial, rather it comes from the depths of nature itself. This nation is built in similarity to the upper force, and therefore, precisely by keeping all the differences between all the tribes and through their correct connection, they reach the state called Shehinah, which is the collective desire of the entire nation, which is able to reveal within itself the upper force, the Creator. Therefore, 12 characteristic differences in their nature are very important and had to be preserved in the most pedantic way. Each group and each person includes in itself 4 different layers of egoism. The smallest egoism is the inanimate level, the vegetative level is a higher egoism, the animate level is even higher, and human has the biggest egoism. The 4-letter name of the Creator or Havayah is defined by these 4 levels. Question: Egoism is a negative quality, so how can it define the Creator's name? Answer: Egoism is a negative quality when it is used egoistically. However, if we use egoism in the opposite form and connect with others above our egoism, it turns into a place of our connection. Without egoism, stubbornness, rejection, and strong desires, we are worth nothing. That's why it is written, the bigger is the person, the bigger is his egoism. Thus, we can't say that egoism is a negative quality. It is negative only to the extent that it separates us from each other. However, if we use it correctly, it becomes our helper against itself. Question: why people divide into groups exactly by the qualities of their egoism? Answer: the will to receive is our entire nature, our substance. We have nothing else. The correct use of our substance enables us to work with it. Initially, all of man's qualities are negative, and therefore it is said that the Creator created the evil inclination. However, if we can work with these qualities in a positive form, we turn the evil inclination into a good one. There is no good inclination within us from nature. It appears only when we can work with the egoistic qualities in a positive form. The biggest egoist has an opportunity to be either the biggest villain or the greatest saint. However, the tribes of the people of Israel differ not only by the quantitative measure of egoism, big or small, but also by its quality and character. All the tribes are very different, therefore it is very important to use each of them according to its source and only to the extent of their synchronous growth, keeping the balance between them on each degree. This is the correct definition for the development of the people of Israel. If we kept it from the moment we arrived on this land and developed here, everything would have been fine. However, the fact is that we achieved the correct connection between us during the period of the first temple and then had to connect with the entire world. This was the reason for the fall and the breaking, for the so-called destruction of the temple, meaning of the correct connection between us. And now, after the nation of Israel has incorporated within itself all the nations of the world, we must rise together. During this ascent, each person will discover their inner nation, their tribe. Although we all have many mixed qualities, they are just material ones, for we didn't work in the spiritual sense, we fell from the spiritual world. And mixing with all the nations of the world on the material level isn't so important. From Cab TV's New Life, December 1, 2016. Two halves of the spiritual ladder. Question: can the ego be positive? I mean, if you do good to yourself, do you also do good to those around you? Can I totally fulfill the law of love thy friend as thyself if I don't love myself? Answer: this law works according to a totally different principle. I don't need to love myself in order to love others. After all, this is an egoistic trick. In fact, nothing works this way. The ego can work properly only if it is controlled by altruism. This is a very high level, the second half of the spiritual ladder. The rule of thy friend as thyself is fulfilled when a person's egoistic attributes begin to work with the intention of in order to bestow. This is the second part of the ascent up the spiritual ladder. The first part, don't do unto others what is hateful to you, exists when you don't use your ego at all. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, July 3, 2016. Soul and physical health. Question: can receiving of the spiritual soul reflect on a physical body, for example, heal it? Answer: hardly ever. The person becomes inspired, empowered, and energized. He has great creative energy, drive, and aspirations. But this does not apply to the body, in particular, to his health. Question: how does the revelation and attainment of the soul help me in this world, for example, in business, family life, etc.? Answer: only in that a person begins to understand the purpose of his existence and therefore, he no longer gets distracted by nonsense, but rather sticks to his guns. Only in this case, studying the wisdom of Kabbalah stabilizes his life in this world. However, the revelation of the soul does not in any way help a person to succeed in the corporal world, to earn more money, to become healthier and happier. The study of the wisdom of Kabbalah directs a person's life toward attainment of the higher purpose of existence, and therefore the material component doesn't concern him much. He must provide for himself and for his family, but no more than that. And he devotes all of his other forces only to the revelation and formation of the soul. From the lesson in Russian, November 6, 2017. Everything depends on us. Question: what should we expect in 2017? Can you foresee anything? Answer: no. Whatever you want is what will happen. What is the point in living or doing anything if you know what is going to happen in advance? According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, this deprives us of our free will. Our path is unknown to anyone. Question: does the Creator know? Answer: no. The Creator sends us signals, and the way we respond to them is how we build our future. We know the ultimate goal, but we don't know how we will reach it. Nowhere does it say anything about it in advance. Everything depends on a person, on his connection with other people and with the whole society. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, the 1st of January 2017. The mixing of the nations. A person is created as an absolute egoist, and his task is to acquire a quality of bestowal and love that is opposite to egoism. This is what the Torah is for, as it is written, "I created egoism and gave the Torah for its correction." Since the light of the Torah corrects and returns to the correct state, we should use it as an instrument to achieve equivalence with the Creator. Here the problem arises: does a person use the Torah for its intended purpose? Unfortunately, we see that its true purpose is absolutely forgotten. The correct attitude to the Torah didn't exist for long, only when the people traveled through the desert and performed correction up to the level of mutual bestowal. Then began their correction on the level of mutual reception in order to bestow, which is symbolized by the entrance to the land of Israel. This is when they built the first temple, the state of the full mutual completion. The system of integral connection was utilized, which means to be as one man with one heart. In it, they revealed the Creator in all His glory. However, as soon as they reached the correct highest state between themselves, they immediately began to fall because the next level of egoism rose within them, which no longer depended on them. This egoism was in the nations of the world and outside the circle created between the Jews called the Temple. They didn't have the strength to resist, correct, join, and absorb it in the connection between them. After all, it belonged to those nations of the world who didn't leave Babylon with them, didn't go through the path of suffering in the Egyptian exile, and didn't do the correction that people of Israel performed during 40 years of crossing the desert. The Jews were not ready to pass the method to the nations of the world and absorb their egoism within themselves because there was no interface and no mutual inclusion of the different desires into each other. Thus, the people of Israel began to fall from the high level of mutual love in order to prepare the correction of the nations of the world. It turns out that this almost completely corrected part of humanity had to be broken, just as the system called Adam was broken in its time, to dissolve in the nations of the world. So the mutual mixing and absorption of different qualities occurred. Part of the qualities, the egoism of the nations of the world, entered the corrected qualities of the people of Israel, and Israel's qualities of bestowal and love fell into the egoistic qualities of the nations of the world. Naturally, nothing good came out of it, except of the mutual mixing. Therefore, it is written that the people of Israel left the exile only to attach to themselves the souls of all the rest of the people, all of Babylon who had scattered around the world and covered the surface of earth. This became the cause of destruction of the first temple, which symbolized love. Then the destruction had to continue according to the same system as in the world of Nikudim, in the system of Adam and in the destruction of the second temple. After the destruction of the first temple, there was no love left between the people, but the vestiges of the quality of bestowal remained and they were expressed in the mutual agreement and laws of the correct community. However, After destruction of the second temple, they also disappeared. As it is written, the people of Israel fell from the level of love to the level of unfounded hatred. At the same time, they became completely identical to the nations of the world and even worse than them because the nations of the world didn't have the rise and fall, where all the previous rises inversely transform into corresponding falls. The higher the ascent, the lower the fall. Therefore, after the final collapse of the Second Temple, the people of Israel found themselves in a spiritual state most remote from the Creator. From this state, they must begin the path of elevation. Thus, the first move was directed to the completion of mutual penetration, the diffusion of the qualities of the nations of the world with the qualities of the people of Israel and vice versa, so that no difference would remain between them. This condition, on the one hand, was achieved through the creation of religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, with the help of various wars, raids, massacres, and expulsions from country to country, and on the other hand, by creation of science and culture, the discovery of continents, the great assimilation and so on by Jews. All this was in order for the final dissolution to happen and for the various qualities to enter each other. Moreover, it is not about physical qualities and material contacts between people since the Jews always lived in isolation, but about the internal, spiritual interpenetration of the qualities. Perhaps, it was expressed externally through various physical actions that are completely incompatible with the spiritual ones. The final diffusion of the qualities of the people of Israel with the nations of the world ended approximately in the 16th century when the great Kabbalist Theori described the method of correction of the world and the system of the correct condition of the universe. Therefore, he is considered Mashiach, Messiah, Ben Yosef among the Kabbalists, which is the predecessor of Mashiach ben David, Messiah, from Kab TV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, the 14th of September 2016. The Jerusalem Post published my new article UN Turns Starvation into a Cash Cow. UN Coordinator for Humanitarian Affairs, more than 20 million people face starvation and famine. Where has he been until now? Gorging with the rest of his lot at their expense? Less than a week ago, Stephen O'Brien, the United Nations Coordinator for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief, stated, more than 20 million people across four countries face starvation and famine. Without collective and coordinated global efforts, people will simply starve to death. Many more will suffer and die from disease. Mr. O'Brien also said $4.4 billion was needed by July to avert disaster. Here is what I'd like to know. Mr. O'Brien has been in office for nearly 2 years now. What has he been doing all this time? What has the UN been doing? Starvation of 20 million people does not happen overnight. Why has the UN not sounded the alarm before? All of a sudden, the internet and news feeds are inundated with harrowing images of emaciated children. Could the UN not tell the world about this when only 5 or 10 million people were starving? Apparently, someone in the defunct institution calculated that it requires no less than 20 million starving people to redeem a ransom of $4.4 billion by July. The billions of dollars the organization already receives could have cured the world's hunger problems several times over. They could have shipped a few million of the 1.3 billion tons of excess food trashed each year and solved this crisis, but they have no interest in doing so. Starving children bring in donations. Feeding them would dry up the flow of money and kill this cash cow. More than anything, Mr. O'Brien's declaration is an admission that the UN is rotten to the core. The sole interests of the politicians and diplomats who serve in it are their paychecks and promoting their careers. For example, consider this piece of information coming from the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF. On its Frequently Asked Questions page, UNICEF USA refutes the vicious and unsubstantiated rumor that Carol M. Stern, President and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, earns more than $1 million. In truth, The organization proclaims, Mrs. Stern earns $521,820. Indeed, a CEO who is a role model of austerity. The root cause of our problems. The growing decadence of the UN should not surprise us. It goes hand in hand with humanity's exponential growth of self-absorption and narcissism. To find a real alternative to the nation's governing body, we need to start by addressing the root cause of all the problems. In 1964, Nobel Prize laureate in physics Denis Gabor wrote, "Till now man has been up against nature, from now on he will be up against his own nature." In fact, we have been up against our own nature since biblical times, when we learned that all of our problems are because the inclination of a man's heart is evil from his youth, Gen 8:21. Still, until recently, when we began to realize the great harm that excessive selfishness inflicts on the world, we obstinately tried to circumvent the problem rather than solve it. Over the eons, humanity has tried every conceivable form of governance in search of the ideal way to balance our need for social connections with our inherent self-centeredness. Slavery, feudalism, capitalism, liberalism, fascism, communism, and Nazism have all been part of the trail of blood and suffering we call the annals of human history. Still, we have not found a single form of governance that is both sustainable and guarantees the well-being of all people. And the reason we have not found one is that, not only are we narcissistic and selfish to the core, but are also growing incrementally more so exponentially. Now we are at a tipping point. We have become so apathetic to each other that if we do not find a remedy for the ills of human nature, media outlets will soon regard 20 million starving people as not newsworthy. To truly help ourselves, we must address two issues. The first is provision of sustenance. In a world where so much food gets lost or wasted, it is unacceptable that human beings should starve. The food already exists. All we need is to collect and ship it where it's needed. The second issue to address concerns prevention. This entails a long-term program that will ultimately change the way we think and feel about the world, from the current exploitative mindset to a more balanced and sustainable approach. The secret of our nation. In a TED Talk given in May 2010, acclaimed American sociologist and physician Nicholas Christakis stated that human beings form a kind of superorganism. Approximately 80 years prior, acclaimed commentator on the Book of Zohar Rav Yehuda Ashlag wrote, "We have already come to such a degree that the whole world is considered one collective and one society. In our generation, when each person is aided for his happiness by all the countries in the world, the possibility of leading a good, happy, and peaceful life in one country is inconceivable when it is not so in all the countries in the world." To this, Ashlag added, "People have not yet grasped this, but stressed that it is only because the act comes before the understanding, and only actions will prove and push humanity forward. In other words, we will not feel that we are a single superorganism, as Christakis put it, until we begin to act the part." This begs the question, how could such a deeply divided world operate as one superorganism? Consider this curious fact. The only nation to have survived since antiquity is the Jewish nation. The Babylonian, Egyptian, Greek, and Roman nations have all vanished, and only Judaism remains. Scholars, philosophers, philo-Semites and anti-Semites throughout the ages have pondered, what is the secret of his immortality? As Mark Twain asked about the Jew, the answer lies in a fundamental difference between the Jews and all other nations. The secret to our endurance is the adhesive of unity. The early Jews came from different tribes and cultures. The only thing that held them together was an idea that Abraham had taught them: mercy and love are the foundation stones upon which to build society. Whenever the ego erupts, do not fight or part ways, but cover it with love instead. The wisest of all men, King Solomon, succinctly summarized Abraham's principle: hate stirs strife, and love covers all crimes, Proverbs 10:12. Living by this approach has held the Jews together through crises and wars for approximately 1,500 years, from Abraham's time until the ruin of the Second Temple some 2 millennia ago. Moreover, history has proven that the cement of unity that covers egoism is so strong that it not only sustained the Jewish people longer than any other nation, but also kept them intact through countless attempts to destroy and disperse them. Although today's Jews have lost that special unity that had sustained them for centuries, the persistent strength of that adhesive is still strong enough to keep our nation in existence. Successful proof of concept. The historic fact of our unique survival is the key to solving the world's problems. Unity over egoism is the one mode of governance the world has not yet tried. Faced with the risk of another world war, mass starvation, accelerated global warming, and pollution of natural resources, I think we simply must give this approach a serious consideration. Of all unlikely people, it was notorious anti-Semite Henry Ford who wrote, "Modern reformers, who are constructing model social systems, would do well to look into the social system under which the early Jews were organized." On this point, he could not be more right. As Ashlag said, the act comes before the understanding. Today, we are implementing Abraham's principle of unity above enmity de facto. After numerous successful unity events throughout the world, including in conflict zones such as Israel, with Arabs and Jews, we are certain that we can reinstate our forefathers' method on a large scale. In my view, until we deal with the heart of the problem, the egoism in human nature, and do so specifically in the way that Abraham bequeathed to his disciples, by bonding atop their animosity, we will find no relief to our woes. The notion that we need not suppress our unruly egos, but simply exert to unite above them may be a novel idea to some, but in my view, we have run out of options. The implementation of Abraham's method is the only way to spare humanity many more years of needless torment. New Life Number 831. Anti-Semitism in the United States and Europe.
Hello, and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Shadarel. Hello. Today, we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the wave of anti-Semitism that's spreading across the world and to understand how can we cope with it, if at all. Yael, please.
Yeah,
we're witnessing an outburst of anti-Semitism in the U.S., in Chile, in Europe, in Australia, in many places. In Europe, it's incited especially by Islamists. In the U.S., since Trump came to power, there's also a very essential wave of anti-Semitism, very much felt by the American Jews. And we'd like to start with the question of what characterizes the current wave of anti-Semitism in the world, and how is it different from previous outbreaks? There is an outburst of anti-Semitism because Jews hate themselves. A Jew that hates the Jew within himself causes anti-Semitism. Can you elaborate? Yes. Because our role in the world as Jews is that we have to show the world how all the people in the world can connect in a good and nice way with each other. If we disregard our role, we don't acknowledge it, we don't know about it, for different reasons. We can talk a lot about it. Are we to blame? Aren't we? We who? We the Jews, who carry a special spark. A spark, it means the force of love and bestowal that exists within us. And by this force, we can develop either hate or love, one of the two. Depending on how that spark works, either the force of the stolen love is under my ego, and the ego determines, or the spark is above my ego, and then the spark, the force of bestowal, determines, and then by that I develop either in the direction of good or bad. Who determines what controls what? Man does. It's man's free choice. And so it follows that, at least for myself, I choose what I want. Either the force of the, let's call it, right will control the left, or the force of the left will control the right. Either the force of love will control the hate, the ego, or the ego will control it. And it's all up to me. I, as a Jew, have the ability to make the choice. The moment I make the choice, by that I influence the entire world, for better or for worse. And I influence the world in a very dramatic way, that the world will advance in accordance with what I choose. And all the nations of the world and everyone else actually only realize my choice. What does it mean that I influence the world, that I have such a dramatic impact over the world? Over the entire world. That 0.5% of Jews that exist in the world actually determine the form of the development of the world. They're the ones that determine. So going back to the question I started with, what characterizes the current wave of anti-Semitism, and why is there suddenly such a surge in anti-Semitism? Because we're not making the right choice, we, the Jews. And therefore, we're also pulling the entire world in a bad direction, to the point of a world war. How is it different from previous anti-Semitic outbreaks? The waves, they come and go all the time. As it says in Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, that hatred came down to the nations of the world, and this is why it's called Mount Sinai, in Hebrew literally meaning a mountain of hatred. That since then, by keeping it or not keeping it, we actually awaken a good or bad attitude towards us from the world in accordance with how we function, because Israel are also called Li Rosh, meaning I have a head, because we choose the direction of the development of the world, and the entire world follows us. We can see it from history, from everything that humanity was engaged in, science, education, culture, everything, that it's actually the Jews that moves from country to country, and this way they taught all the kings, all the elites, everywhere, what to do. Even though that they were hated, they were also needed. So you're saying that beyond leading in science and other fields, we're actually demanded to choose whether to lead the world in a good or bad direction? Were we to choose the good, correct direction, then the only thing that we would be engaged in is building the good and right connection between all the people of the world, just like Abraham, our patriarch, wanted to do with all of the people in ancient Babylon. We would simply continue in his footsteps, building good relations between all the people in the world, and then the world would surely advance in a good and nice direction without hatred, and the main thing for us would surely be to lead the world to a good and nice state, to a good connection. We're now experiencing a serious crisis in humanity where we have to give account. What did we do to this day? And we have to see that everything that we went through, after we'll scrutinize these things, we'll see that we didn't do any good. We have to change our ways, our attitude to human society, to the family, to everything, towards each other. And if we start building a good, a nice society, then we don't need all the surplus that we have attained, that we have. And we don't need to go to outer space, and we don't need this culture that it's really horrifying to look at, and the egoistic education and science that only develops weapons and false medicine. We can live in a very, very good and nice way, having very good relations between us without any problems or troubles, and everything that we have achieved in our egoistic development, it only seemed to us that by this we can control nature with our ego and control each other, and it won't work. And therefore now, we're in a period called the recognition of evil, the recognition of the evil of our egoistic development that we've been going through for the past thousands of years since ancient Babylon and to this day, and today we have to perform self-scrutiny and to move to a new form of development, inner development, emotional development, developing the connections between us. The fact that there's a wave of terror going on now, it directly says that something about us is corrupted or that our relations are worse than they were before. Of course. Of course. If we incite our ego by the good spark that exists in us, that all its good is passed on to the ego just in order to make it bigger and to push it to control others, then our development is the complete opposite to what it should be. What's the difference between the wave of anti-Semitism in the US and in Europe? It's felt as two very different things. They're different because the Jews are much more in power in the United States and not that much in Europe. So in Europe, the hatred towards them, I'd say it's a kind of hatred that comes out of habit from previous forms, whereas in the United States it's a new form. It was never that bad. It started and it won't end. This form won't end. And the Jews there will have to change a lot because their attitude towards all these things is very, very far from what Jews have to do as the bearers of this spark for all nations. What would you expect them to do in the States? They'll have to perform self-scrutiny about what do they have to do, about what their role is, what is their work, which is to make human society become as one man and one heart up to the point of love. And they're obligated to do it, and they're the only ones that can bring it to humanity. In the meantime, they're engaged in the very opposite. They separate people. They built different disputes, parties, different such shapes and forms. They want to be in control. They want for their ego to rule and not for the form of love to rule. That what's special about them is that they can bring love to the world, and they're doing the very opposite. And therefore, in the United States, they brought themselves to a state where they're in danger of being annihilated worse than it was in Nazi Germany 70, 80 years ago. That bad. It's a natural law. It's not that it's that bad. It's a natural law. This is how it's going to be if they won't listen to what their role is and realize it, keep it. Alongside with the anti-Semitism, and it's kind of strange because there is an expectation with Trump and everything, the United States, without the correct Jewish force, not like now that they're causing all the evil, but without the good Jewish force, the United States will turn into a Nazi country worse than Germany was. Despite all of Trump's efforts, it has nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the law of nature that Jews have to keep, because inside them there's a connection between their spark, a connection between the human ego and the upper good force, that then they can draw it to the world and correct it. Okay, concerning Europe. In Europe, anti-Semitism is more Islamist. It's because Europe has a problem with Islam. And the Islamists, they want to divert the fire that's aimed at them to the Jews, and this is why they're doing it this way. But eventually, of course, both Islam and also the Jews will be hated. And this is a question: if the Jews will do good, they'll be able to calm things down and bring connection. And if not, then the Europeans will connect with the Islamists against the Jews. In essence, is there a difference between the Islamist anti-Semitism and the Nazi anti-Semitism? What do you mean by Islamist anti-Semitism? Islam against Jews or the Europeans against Islam and Jews? All of them. No, I have to know what am I answering. I'm saying that those that incite anti-Semitism in Europe today are especially the Islamists, where in the past those that stirred up anti-Semitism were neo-Nazi groups. So I'm asking, is there a difference between these two kinds of anti-Semitism? Yes, there is a difference. Because with the Islamist bodies, there is an ideological problem. They feel that Judaism that bears inside it the ability to change the world is ideologically competing with them. And the Europeans, they're not that dependent on ideology, but they have a natural kind of anti-Semitism that exists in each and every person against those that bear the spark. Meaning it's something built in inside Europeans, of course, and not only in Europeans. The root of hatred towards Jews exists in every person in the world. It's natural. There's nothing special about it. We're not talking about whether a person's nice or not, guilty or not, but this is how it simply is. We also see that countries where there's a very small percentage of Jews, like in Poland or other countries, you see that there is an awakening of anti-Semitism without any apparent reason in recent years. The reason is that the ego is growing and the Jews aren't taking care of it, aren't directing it to its correct use, and therefore there is a surge in anti-Semitism. Are there such nations that have a greater tendency towards anti-Semitism? The more a nation is developed, economically, mentally, technologically, and so on and so forth, the more anti-Semitic they are. We can say that there was no anti-Semitism in China, and lately there is, and the same for other countries. So what's the connection? Why a more developed nation is more anti-Semitic? Because there, that spark that's supposed to bring us to connection is used in order to bring us to separation. What do you mean? The spark that the Jews have, they use this spark to lead the entire world towards separation, towards egoistic development in technology and science and medicine and education and culture and everything. It separates? Of course it separates people. Nothing connects people. No development, as nice as it might seem to you, it doesn't connect people, it only separates them. Because we see that actually nothing connects people. But even if we're talking about medicine, the fact that medicine is developing and allows to heal people and do good things for them, there's something that it at least seems to us as something that brings people closer at heart. Closer how? It's all in order to benefit. To gain money, honor, how does it bring closer? It doesn't bring closer. It's business like any other thing. Were I not to gain from it money or honor or control, would I develop it as an egoistic person who is entirely egoistic? What is this illusion? The illusion exists. Fine, but it's not the truth. So what's the point in talking about it? We are completely egoistic. All of our actions, everything that we do is only in order to benefit at the expense of others, and we simply have to see the essence of the action, and then you'll see how egoistic it really is. And we never do anything for the benefit of others. So why are the more developed nations more anti-Semitic? Because they're more egoistic, and they use their spark more strongly in favor of the egoistic desire, in favor of the will to receive. And therefore, it's the opposite to true Judaism that has to do the very opposite, to use that spark of light in order to develop that spark, to raise it above the ego. And here, in the corporeal development, the spark is under the ego, that it is the ego that rules, and therefore there is this difference, the oppositeness between the way that all the Jews use this spark nowadays and all the nations around them, as opposed to how it's supposed to be. And therefore there is hate towards the Jew inside a person. And regarding what Jews bring into the world, there is consensus around it and love towards it. They want for the Jews to work this way for them. It has to do with the amount of Jews in the world or in a certain country? No. But wherever you see some corporeal success, probably there's a Jew there somewhere. So how does the ego of that country or nation develop if there are not many Jews there that, as you said, they're the ones that propel development? So how does a certain nation develop if there are no Jews there? Then they don't develop. Then that nation doesn't develop. How can they develop? By what? Were Columbus not to come to America, would those people develop? Probably not. No. Or to Australia, or to Africa. They wouldn't develop. But only Europe, with all the Middle East. And a bit of India, a bit of China, a bit of Japan, and also in a very primitive way. This is what you have had there. Even in Russia, where did it come from? Especially from Europe, where all the Jews that were thrown out of the land of Israel came to. So in the essence of every developed nation. We see it from history. The way Jews were thrown from country to country, the world developed accordingly, thanks to that spark that exists in this nation. But there's a kind of contradiction, because if Jews came to these different places back then, and this is why these countries, nations started developing, then today there should be more Jews than in other places. No, but when a nation develops, and we see it very clearly from history, that nation develops to a state where they acknowledge that their entire development comes as a result of the spark, and that spark is felt as a force that's counter to themselves. As a result, they start hating the Jews, throwing them out of their country, and this way they gradually decline, and then again they want to bring them back. So these are very complicated relations. Yeah, you can't have a world without Jews, and it's very hard with the Jews. What I don't understand is, previously you said that wherever you see success, probably there's a Jew involved. So I understand that according to your perception, Jews is the force that develops humanity. Yeah, but it's not for the better. Okay. Can we say that they're like the engine of human development? Yes. Okay. And there is something that this engine is doing incorrectly, right? Yes. What then is that thing that this engine of human development, which are the Jews, that they're doing wrong? Because they are increasing the ego within people. Previously you said that they're increasing separation instead of connection. The increasing of the ego says everything. Okay, so this engine increases the separation between people to this day? Yes. And what this engine is supposed to do is to increase the connection between people? Yes. If this engine, the Jewish people, will increase the connection between people in the world, what will happen? The Jews will develop the world towards connection among all nations, and the world will reach a state where everyone will be as one family. And by that, the world will come to the recognition of a higher degree than their current existence. They will discover the next, more higher form of existence in the connection between people, which is truly called Adam, a human being. That humanity will rise to a new degree of the recognition of the eternal, complete, and perfect world. And what will happen with anti-Semitism? There will be no anti-Semitism. On the contrary, everyone will acknowledge that this role that was given to a part of humanity, that this part are called Yehudim, Jews, from the word Yichud, connection, that finally they brought the world to correction, and the world is in a good state. So this hatred towards Jews, that you say that it's a natural law, where will it go? It'll turn into love. And then, what will be the attitude towards the Jews? There will no longer be Jews and non-Jews. Everyone will be connected as one body, as one man and one heart. Okay, so I understand. There's an engine that today is working in a certain way, and it has to change direction and work in a different way. Yes. So what's the turning point? Suppose I'm a Jew. I hear what you're saying. You said that I have the freedom of choice. That's what's special about me as a Jew. What do I have to choose in the next moment in order to turn the engine in the right direction? In the direction of love of others. How to educate myself, teach myself. That's what I have to think about. How to teach myself and others to love others. And for this we have to develop plenty of things, education, culture, history, geography, to show everyone that the whole of nature is arranged in the direction of love of others. Otherwise we'll reach a general destruction. The entire world will be destroyed. Technical question. You said that eventually everything that we developed caused separation. It didn't cause any good. Are you against technology? I am in favor of anything that can connect people. That's it. Meaning the problem is not the technological development per se. The problem is all the means that distance people. What distances people isn't technology itself, but how man uses it, right? Yes, but on the other hand, when we connect at heart, when we connect in thought, we'll no longer need all of these technologies and the waves and the lines and everything. We'll have a different kind of connection. We'll be connected in one body. What will we need then? Nothing. Nothing besides an emotional connection between us. Last question. You said that humanity has to advance towards a new kind of development, which will be an emotional development. What kind of emotions have to develop in us so that every person will feel others as himself? That's enough. Thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. Thank you, Yael. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.